And tonight it is my pleasure to introduce Jack. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Paulette. Thanks, everyone who's doing service here today. And thanks for Ken for keeping the rooms open in Australia, too. I really appreciate that. I wanted to time myself using the app because I love seeing it count down, but my app's decided that it's not a fan of me. And I think the other thing that I like is that sometimes I like to put the sound on the timing app that ends with and the winner is. I just always think that's cool in NA meetings. So I was asked to share a little bit today, maybe about my story. And I think something very interesting in getting started just really perked my mind because I had started recovery in another fellowship that I came to accidentally. Told I'm not the only person who brings someone else to a meeting and the other person doesn't come back and you do. And that's, that was weird. And I think that when I got there, I was at a pretty low point in my life. I hadn't really used any drugs or alcohol for probably 6 months, but I was also homeless. And life wasn't that great. I'd spent much of my life quite mentally unwell and had a significant trauma history that I didn't know a lot about and had lived with my parents. And I think at the point where I probably realized I had a problem with addiction, my mental health team realized that the diagnosis I'd had for many years was not in fact it at all. And I guess all of my coping mechanisms were taken away. But the other thing that I very much realized was the betrayal I'd sort of had from my family, if that makes any sense. My mother and people just wasn't great. And that's essentially what led me to being homeless. I kind of ended up in a mental health ward for the second last time and met someone when I came out of there to like a transition halfway house type place who I took to a meeting. And I now actually work for the service who cared for me for all those years. And I thought the person who I'd taken to the meeting wasn't with us anymore, but I actually saw them still listed as a client the other day, and that was all kinds of weird. But how I then sort of came to end up with Narcotics Anonymous, and I think to some extent it ties into my secular journey, is I was doing my step work with a sponsor for the first time in the other fellowship, and I found it really difficult. And what I found really difficult was that this person had a really strong affiliation with one of the local churches. And I didn't feel like I could get, well, I couldn't. I never finished step one and I couldn't do any of it because I would go over to her house and there'd be lots of conversation about whether I believed in God and did I believe in God. And I'd be asked that question repeatedly. And it felt so uncomfortable. It wasn't funny. And I came home one night after meeting with them, and I was pretty determined that I was gonna stop at the drive-through bottle shop, and I didn't. I made it home, and something curiously, my mind, I think someone had shared in a meeting before that that they'd done online meetings when they couldn't leave the house after some surgery. So I thought I might just find an online meeting. I don't give that a go. Like, how hard can it be to Google that stuff? So I did. And I found myself in an online meeting, the same fellowship, and met a few people there who suggested I should try some NA meetings, or that they hung around in both. And I thought, oh yeah, well I could do that. What harm does it do? This has sort of stopped me from, picking up a drug or a drink. And tonight, like, so what does that matter? And yes, sort of with my lifestyle and stuff at the time, it suited me to be able to go to meetings online. It still very much does. I'm quite isolated from much of either fellowship. And I think that, oh, probably important to say, I often get imposter syndrome in NA. A lot of what I struggled with was alcohol, and we know alcohol's a drug, but also prescribed meds and the ways I'd go about getting them, I think, more than anything. But then I think having finished my step 11 this morning, the traditional way, the non-traditional way, and all the things in life have changed. Like, it can't be deniable that I have a problem with that I'm an addict, because things wouldn't have changed the way they have and I probably wouldn't have stuck around if I didn't need to be here. And I think that maybe imposter syndrome's normal. So anyway, I'll just normalize that for a sec. But I still had a level of discomfort working the steps. I think between all like the trauma I'd experienced that had kind of led me here, everything going on in my life, I could accept the use of the word God and I could turn it into something else. But as I got, there'd be intermittent these points where I'd just be like, what? I was nursing, I was working in palliative care, and it's not that I didn't believe there was something bigger than me, but I also needed to believe to also not think that. I was just sharing with my sponsor when we talked through that question of sort of like when, kind of about what I'd lost through addiction, and I'd listed these material things I'd lost, and my final answer had been, but most of all, I lost myself. So, in terms of my secular journey, I need this part of my recovery. I can tolerate other spaces, but I need this because if I've lost myself, then I have to find myself, and I have to have some really firm belief in myself. And without that, then I can't do recovery. I think, and through the more step work I've done, the harder it's got. I think everyone takes forever to do step one. But then I sort of did, and probably did the same with step two. But once I got to step, oh, probably six, seven, I struggled more with the God stuff. Just I really did at that point. I really started questioning everything. I read all these different books. I think at one point for like step 10 or 11, I had like secular NA steps open, traditional, and I was swapping words out, and I was looking at other fellowships, and I was reading people's books, and like it was just craziness. And it was actually my sponsor a few weeks ago who, I'm not going to say he's an, I don't know, like I don't even know what I think of the word atheist or agnostic or any of that stuff. But he was like, why don't you just literally swap the word? And like, because I said, I can't get past the frequent use of the word God. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. And we talked about the concept of like trauma and all of that stuff. And just deciding that I was going to believe in unicorns, essentially. And if that helped me finish it, then that was fine. And it didn't matter whether the unicorns were a higher power or whatever they were. Just like, was I okay if a unicorn suggested I should do something, would I do it? Yes. And at those points where I just actually didn't have anything to believe in myself, did I still believe in unicorns? Absolutely. And that's really worked to help me finish my step 11. I think the other intensely interesting and how I fell into a secular meeting, I don't remember. What I do remember, and it was probably just once I was really comfortable with online meetings, and I think I'd got comfortable with when days were going bad. My sponsor, when I it was my third sponsor, and I had a really bad habit of like messaging him and like reaching out, and he had a terrible habit of like basically finding, I reckon, the next meeting that was online and telling me he couldn't talk because he was going to be there. And what effect that actually had is that I learnt that in times of distress, I could find a meeting anywhere in the world. And that's probably quite potentially how I found my first secular meeting. And the only person who I can really recollect who was there is Ken. Sorry to out you, Ken. But what, when the way I related to the people I found in my first meeting of 12-step recovery was a group of people talking about their trauma and how that had influenced their addiction. And it was quite, and then I came to NA when I was at that point of desperation because I couldn't keep going with all of these God references, and I sort of floated along. But then when I came to secular meetings, I heard someone there that night, and I don't recall who it was, although I can, create my suspicions these days, talk about how they'd spoken at an event for people who'd survived childhood trauma. And it was another one of those revelationary moments, similar to my first other fellowship meeting, where I went, oh, these people actually get me. But At that point in time, it was like getting that I could do recovery without God. And I think that in other spaces, people would say that was a God job and it wasn't. I don't know if it was a unicorn job. It was probably actually quite an intentional me job. And that's okay. And I'm okay with that. And I think I've had, I probably didn't attend secular meetings very regularly. And I've had these little up and down phases with them. But every now and again in my life, in my recovery, I've been really confronted with different occurrences and with my own ethics. I lost my godmother in February this year, and I live in a house, and I'd moved a year beforehand. And she was a strict Catholic, a very strict Catholic. And I found that difficult. I always found it difficult in terms of like gender and stuff, because she was, in her late 80s and could get quite passionate about the rainbow people in church. And but I had been in Melbourne at an appointment, and I'd actually been at an appointment to talk to a specialist about gender affirming care and start hormones. And she didn't know that part of me when I had a call from her doctor who was looking after her, and she'd been well. She'd been assessed to go into a nursing home, and the assessor had called me that morning and, told me it was all good to go. And that was her choice. She was just, sick of being old and looking after herself and all those things. And a doctor called me that afternoon and wanted, like, was really sort of badgering about speaking to her sons. And they were both further away, and one was on a plane. And then I found that she was not going to survive the night. So I hot-footed it 2.5 hours, 3 hours back to my hometown, to my workplace, and spent the night with her. And she was so distressed waiting for her children and completely out of it. And I knew that the only thing that would settle her, that what she needed, and she was waiting for the priest, insistent on the priest, was that I needed to read the prayer, her prayers to her. And whilst I don't regret that I did that, I found that really difficult. I think it was then the next night I was, or not long after I was, back in a secular space. Not that I ever left it, but it was one of the few places I found comfort, because I felt like I'd betrayed myself. But I had these really odd feelings around it. I just really did. To hear myself reciting prayers that I'd grown up with, that I just have so much crapola associated with, it was quite awful. And I think that in secular spaces, I've met just a freedom to do recovery the way that I need to, that I really do need to. And sometimes I can find it, like, I find it just way too much. I hang around in a lot of LGBT meetings in Australia, but when I'm not, it's too much. It's actually too much. I can tolerate it like once a week, maximum. And I remember in a local face-to-face meeting, got really bothered when she was looking up secular meetings, looking up meetings for when she was down in the city, and saw the secular meeting and went, "Oh, the facility's closed." And went, "Oh, jump on it online. It's a good meeting." And then she realised it was a secular meeting and was just like, "Oh my God, how can people? You can't even do recovery like that." And people's really intense thoughts about that. And it's just, and I said, "Yeah, but I can't do recovery the way you do either. I can't do that. My form of, and it's been hard. It's been really hard to do the steps. I am grateful for my sponsor being quite adaptive, because I had known him before I'd found secular meetings, before I knew it was a thing. Otherwise, I think I would have ended up with a totally different sponsor, but has been really flexible with finding bits of the secular steps and bits of sort of the traditional step working guide and changing words. And like, I think I spent like 45 weeks questioning what is prayer? What is prayer? What's praying? I don't meditate, and went round and round and round in that circle, until I figured out that I sing. And that's, because he said, "Well, what actually gives you like quiet? What gives you quiet? What allows you to just ponder things and just not be connected to all the chaos of the world?" I was like, "Oh, loud music while I build Lego." And he's like, "Do you sing?" And I was like, "Well, yes, obviously." He's like, well, maybe that's your form of prayer. And I was like, but I don't want to call it prayer. He's like, don't, just call it singing. And like the flexibility, I think, to have these, the freedom in the way I do my recovery, I don't think I would have stuck around. If I think back to that first initial sponsorship conversation, I wouldn't be here. I couldn't be here if that was the circumstances. And yeah, it can be really hard. And I've been in meetings where the Lord's Prayer has been used, and I've left those places. Some I've not gone back to. Some I do. Like, things just have fluctuated so much, and my recovery has been, I don't know, like, what's normal anyway? So if recovery is what we like, there's this whole group of people out there that are normal who aren't addicted to drugs and alcohol, right? Then is there this whole group of, and we think they're weird, is there this whole group of people in recovery who are then recovery normal because they have a belief in God or faith or a higher power? And just like, I don't think that there's any lines often in recovery, and I find it really harsh when people, when they're created for us. And I'm eternally grateful for the spaces where I get to do things the way I need to do them. I'm really surprised at what I've survived in recovery, and in the last 6, 9 months, that I just, one of those would have taken. Think when I think of the support I've had from secular meetings, even when I'm not in there, the non-exist, their time that many have worked for, some of them don't. My friends in Australia who are more secular, they are my best friends in recovery, and they're my best friends in life. My therapist asked me a few weeks ago if I could start trusting a couple of people. And I was just like, with different bits of my life. And I was just like, whoa, I do. Like, got people in recovery I trust. And I'd spent my whole life being betrayed by people. And now the people I trust are here. And like, I flip them and they've gone through terrible stuff and some very, very difficult things, some very difficult things. It's, I think, weeks when a therapist was away, and I've seen her for 10 issues. When a therapist was away, I've seen her for 10 years. So I see her once a week, and I've had points in recovery where that's been twice a week. But otherwise, when she was away, I would think away for a week. That was barely, let alone two. Remember last year, like, she just went on these for 8 weeks, and that was all cool, like, it was fine. And now I've got such a strong network of people around me, and it's not hard. Last time she did, one of my best mates got, one of my good mates, not my best mate, a mate got caught with some stuff that he shouldn't have had, and then my best friend passed away a week later. Like, it was all very amusingly not intense, but the things I've survived that I can acknowledge are hard, but just keep going. And I last Sunday night, I realized I needed to reach out to someone, and I, called a member in my phone. I said, oh, you've probably just gone to bed. And she was like, yeah. And I was like, sorry, I just needed to reach out to someone, a new one. And obviously she got up and spoke to me, but at one point it said, oh, Jack, it's not as if there's not 200 other numbers in your phone. You would have just rung someone else. I was like, yeah, true that. And failing that, I would have just looked up the international meeting list and got on one of them. And I think there's a real, as much as I can be alone and feel lonely, I don't feel lonely. And I think that gives me ability to be on my own, because I'm never alone, because the minute I want to speak to someone, there's at least 200 numbers in my phone. And I probably, in these days, probably would only need to try maybe two or three, and someone would answer, because I've got those people everywhere. And I don't need to believe, I don't need to externalize a God or a higher power or make it about the lawn or the flipping plant, even though it's pretty out the back, because I have those numbers. So whether that becomes my high power, whether it's a unicorn, whether it's my unicorn heat bag or my weighted unicorn, I don't know, and I don't need to know. I just need to know that coming to these places, and in particular this kind of place, coming to secular places and LGB places, is actually what keeps me okay. I'm not going to be a great heroist person. I'm not going to be the prince or the queen or the king or any of those things, but I'm going to go okay. And I'm glad for that, and I'm grateful for that. So thank you.